It is the Nightcap Hour 2 here on VSiN. That's JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, looking sharp in that blue blazer. How you doing, brother?
Good, man. Appreciate it. I was having a bad hair day. I was a little nervous. You know, I had a long day. I had to do a little bit of work for another job right before this. And I was really nervous about the product lasting in my hair. About, like, you know, if I'd maybe get some stray guys flipping down in front of my face or anything like that. So, product has held up so far.
The flow looks good.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I can tell you. I can tell you if you want.
Good flow.
Product is. It's a hairspray.
We got two NBA games still going on right now, and JVT has action on both of them. And right now,
did it for you, so we could have something to talk about.
Just for me?
Yeah.
Well, that's very nice of you. You're a very considerate person.
Not for my bottom line or anything.
No. The Denver Nuggets leading 94-79 over the San Antonio Spurs. We were just doing a lot on win totals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the San Antonio Spurs, they need 6 wins to get to the over, 19 losses to clinch the under. And you said during the break that you actually think that this is going to be a bit of a sweat if you have the over.
Oh, yeah. Like, look, so we're talking about San Antonio, second hardest schedule left, right behind the Houston Rockets. We're talking about San Antonio by far leading the league in games they have yet to be played. They have 24 games left that need to be played, San Antonio. Next team, 22, 21. There's a lot left for San Antonio to deal with down the stretch in terms of their schedule. Most back-to-backs in the second half as well, tied with Memphis. They had 11 back-to-backs to deal with in the second half. There was a lot going on with the Spurs' schedule from a construction standpoint that was really going to give them challenges on top of playing out in front of their skis in the first half, especially on defense. So I think it's definitely going to come down, I think, to the last few weeks. You know, 6 wins, I think a lot, you know, you'll see 6. You'll be like, oh, okay, you can get 6 wins. 6 wins are hard to come by, right? And 6 wins is hard to come by for a bad team, and that's what the Spurs are. So I don't have any action on it, but I'm really excited to see how it plays out over the next few weeks for San Antonio, because I think it's going to be a sweat.
And a team like San Antonio, who just got smoked by Cleveland at home.
Right. We watched that, yeah.
Yeah, lost by 24 on Monday night. So they have back-to-back games against Denver here, which they have blown a lead against Denver. So, yeah, it'll be tricky. And when you look at the standings right now, JVT, the possibility of them not making the play-in doesn't seem great. Or for them to make the play-in, I should say. When you look at right now, they're in the 9th spot in the Western Conference, a game and a half up on Golden State. New Orleans is looming 3.5 games back of San Antonio, Sacramento. Oklahoma City's going to fall apart. So really, it's that, can New Orleans, who got blasted today by Brooklyn, but can New Orleans get enough wins to jump a team like San Antonio to get into that play-in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, San Antonio and Golden State are moving in the wrong direction, right? So if you're a team like New Orleans, you feel great. And here's the other thing. New Orleans might be 1-4 in their last 5 games, but keep in mind that they were going through a stretch. They were 4-1 over a 5-game stretch. They were 6-3 over a 9-game stretch. They had started to turn things around. And this is the one, you know, when Aaron sent this, I liked this a lot because there were a couple things. One, they took Chicago off the board at a lot of spots. I was really surprised by that. Excuse me. Pelicans have been playing well. If they're healthy, 4-1 to make the postseason, I think it's something worth looking at.
Yeah, we'll get into those a little bit later on in the hour. Patrick Everson going to join us in about a minute to talk some Masters, some where money's coming in. Also, the NFL draft. We'll continue to hit on some NFL draft topics. And today, we'll look a little bit at the defensive side of things, because it is trending towards the direction of this being very offensive heavy early on, JVT. As we all know about the quarterbacks, likely going 1-2-3, maybe even 1-2-3-4. Then you've got Kyle Pitts. You've got, Jamar Chase, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Penei Sewell. Mm-hmm. So when will that first defensive player come off the board? Who will it be? We'll get into those odds a little bit later on in this hour. One other game to get you updated on, and it was the main event, as JVT pointed out on VSiN.com. Check those out every single day. Phoenix up 49-38, under 40 seconds to go in the first half. So the under looking like the right side.
Yes.
You all right?
I don't know. I think I'm dying.
Yeah. All right.
A little dry spot.
JVT's a little verklempt. He's emotional about this Suns game. He's got the Suns, though, so he's feeling good. Patrick Everson coming up in a moment. It It is the nightcap. We keep it rolling here. JVT has had a swig or two of water. He's feeling better.
It's like one of those dry spots in my throat, and I didn't want to cough. I want to be a professional, you know? Really choked up about it, though.
It's that Phoenix Suns. No, I mean, Charlotte over or under, over clinching today.
Mm.
You know, it's been a good day.
I think I'm excited to talk to Patrick Everson. I think that's what it is.
Well, who wouldn't be excited to talk to Patrick Everson? At Covers underscore Vegas on Twitter is where you can find him. He is the senior reporter for Covers.com. Patrick, a lot to get to. Let's look a little bit back before we look forward. Monday night, Baylor takes care of business. The under somehow comes home when it looked like it was trending over the entire evening. And then Mark Few and Gonzaga opted not to foul, and Baylor slowed things down. Overall, how was the evening for the books and the futures market? How did it all play out?
Yeah, and that's the thing. The futures market plays so heavily into, you know, the latter round games and certainly into the championship game. And this was something I went back and forth with a couple of different books here in town over the course of the day. And for the most part, on the futures book, it was good. BetMGM needed Baylor. Superbook needed Baylor. William Hill needed Baylor. Now, in some cases, Gonzaga was a winner, but just not as good a winner. In the case of BetMGM, Gonzaga was definitely a loser. But BetMGM took so many big bets on the game itself that it BetMGM Nevada, I should say. I don't think nationally this was a bad outcome all the way around for BetMGM. But here in Nevada, if you're just localizing that market, they were, you know, they had seven-figure liability to Gonzaga winning the championship. So they were happy that Gonzaga lost. But on the flip side, they took three huge bets. One big player came in and put 300-plus on plus five, on money line, Baylor on both, obviously, and also had 300 plus on under, what on that under that you just noted, 159.5. So everything that they gained on Gonzaga not winning, they gave back pretty much to this one player with these huge plays. So it was kind of a wash in that sense. But it seemed like most books were rooting for Baylor, even though Gonzaga may well have been a win. Also, just that Baylor was a better win.
Patrick, when you were talking to some of the oddsmakers around town and others that you spoke to, did you get a sense of what the in-game action was like and how well they did on that? Because I would just assume, and we were here watching it, I had Baylor before the game, but tried to get in a little bit back on Gonzaga to set some middles up. I would assume there'd be a lot of chasing Gonzaga, expecting the Bulldogs to come back. Did you get a sense of how the in-game wagering was from a handle and a side perspective and how it went for some of these operators?
Right. I didn't ask about it specifically, but I think, I mean, and you know this for sure, Jonathan, you would know this well. I am certain that books probably saw some either chasing or, like you said, more so you feel like you can set yourself up for a middle opportunity there. Like, this has got to turn around. You know, it's Gonzaga's is a very good team with a bunch of talented players, NBA guys. So it's, you know, I'm sure that at halftime, and even, you know, and even in play, as you noted, that there was some of that going on. I was certainly thinking about it. I was looking at it, and I was like, where does this go? Because I had Baylor money line pregame.
Ooh.
And but I just decided to ride it out. But I'm sure it was a lot like it. You know, it was not a lot like, because this is a bad comparison to a Super Bowl, and especially a Super Bowl with the Patriots. But like when the big favorite's down a lot and there's a lot of time left, people are going to jump in and. I was kind of alluding there to that Falcons-Patriots game from a few years ago where everybody just hammered the Patriots at halftime and in the second half.
Yeah, and I think maybe at the end of the game we saw a 16.5, which didn't come home, but if you were just all in on Baylor throughout the evening, you could have got, what, JVT, plus two here at Circa, plus 260 for Baylor to cover the second half money line. I mean, it was unbelievable what you could have done as Baylor just really covered every single thing that that was put out there. As we chat with Patrick Everson, senior reporter, covers.com, at covers underscore Vegas on Twitter. The Masters starts tomorrow, Patrick. I guess I should ask who you're going to be rolling with, since you were on Baylor bringing home that Chili's money on Monday night. What have the books been seeing so far? You know, we've been talking about these past couple of days, the meteoric rise up the odds board for Jordan Spieth because of how he's been playing and, you know, where you could have got him at just a couple weeks ago. But who are some of the names that books around town have been mentioning to you that have been getting a lot of play?
That's the one. I mean, that is the one. That is the universal right now. over the past week. I've talked with BetMGM. I've talked with Superbook. I've talked with Wynn, Doug Castaneda over at Wynn, and today with Nick Bogdanovich at William Hill. And it's just a Jordan Spieth frenzy. And if Jordan Spieth wins, then it's going to be a, you know, the books are going to take a bath on that one. But that's good. I mean, look, we want we want people to win here. So it definitely Spieth is a trouble spot. As you know, he had odds as long as 60, 70, maybe 80 to 1 or more, depending on which book you shopped at, when they opened the Masters and so forth. And Doug Castaneda at Wynn Las Vegas, he said, look, he's a big number that we're trying to avoid. That's how he put it to me on Monday. And Nick Bogdanovich at William Hill US kind of reiterated that today. He said he's got tickets all the way down. He's at William Hill, he's a 9-1 favorite. ahead of DJ and Justin Thomas. So I thought that was interesting. And I can tell you that you may have seen this on Twitter about 15 minutes ago, that a certain very sharp, savvy bettor is here in town, and he went to Circa Sports over at the Tuscany and put 10 grand on Spieth at plus 1375, I believe, which is a pretty good price for Circa to be offering relative to what I've seen everywhere else. So there's some sharp play there too, but I'll pause and let you interject, and then there's some other people we can certainly talk about.
Spieth is at 1375. And one thing JVT has kind of hit on, Patrick, is the fact that where it once was, you almost feel like you're getting in too late in the game on a guy like Jordan Spieth when you could have got it at 60-1. What about Justin Thomas? He's been one that I actually played a little Justin Thomas plus 1125 earlier today. Like him in some matchups. Have you seen some Justin Thomas money coming in this week?
Definitely. This is Jeff Sherman over at the Superbook, who, as we all know, does a great job with. I mean, he wouldn't call himself Golf Odds on Twitter if he wasn't neck deep in Golf Odds. But that's a player certainly seeing some play at multiple spots. But as of the beginning of the week, and this probably has changed a little bit, but I doubt much, he was number one in tickets and number two in money at the Superbook. So people are certainly on him. A great win last month, the Players' Championship, and obviously a top-shelf field that tournament has. So he's certainly getting a good look. Some others that are getting a look at the Superbook, among tickets, obviously against Spieth, but Shoffley, DeChambeau, Morikawa, Koepka getting some tickets. And then on the money side at the Superbook, Johnson in the money, of course, defending champion, Thomas, Rahm, Shoffley, and then once again, Spieth, to keep coming back to that. I thought what was kind of interesting today that Nick Bogdanovich pointed out from William Hill US is that McIlroy and Shoffley aren't getting, the way he termed it, aren't getting much respect at all. No one is running to the window to bet either one of them, and they're both in the top, six or seven choices at pretty much every book that has in every book's Masters portfolio. So it's kind of interesting they're not seeing. I think I can kind of see it with Rory, but Xander, I know a lot of last season was a trendy play. I know I played him pretty regularly, and I'm thinking about doing so this weekend too.
No, and where Rory is approaching, Patrick. It's funny, that's where he's not there yet, and at least as extreme as Spieth was. Rory's starting to be that guy who, very talented golfer, always up near the top of the leaderboard, but never really delivers. And so you're starting to see the odds drift. And at some point, we could regularly see like a 20-1 next to Rory McIlroy, which would be fascinating considering we're used to seeing him at like 12-1 usually.
18 right now.
Right, yeah. So we're getting there. Let me ask you really quickly, when you're going around and talking to odds makers, do you get a sense of what some of the action is like on some of these matchups? Are there any particular matchups that have garnered a lot of attention? Any one golfer either getting faded or followed in some of the matchups around town?
Yeah, this was something that I know, and I'm going to look if you'll humor me for just one second here.
Of course.
This was something they sent around on some of this earlier today, some of the props and so forth. And obviously some really notable pairings here, but they saw some money at William Hill US, a couple of $6,000 plays on a couple of matchups. Max Homa against Harris English. Taking home at minus 115 for six grand or several thousand, I think $6,000. Yes. On Brian Harman against Kevin Kisner. Those are a couple of the big plays, and a couple of matchups that Nick alluded to specifically, mainly because of the bets that were made on them. Mm-hmm. But, a couple of key matchups here, Spieth plus 120 against John Rahm, which is really interesting because Spieth is the favorite in the tournament at William Hill, but he's plus 120 against John Rahm in a tournament matchup. And then it's a pick 'em between Spieth and who we just talked about, JVT, Rory McIlroy. So those are a couple of interesting ones that they got pointed out today.
And for clarity, really quick, I would assume those are tournament matchups, right? Not single round, like first round matchups.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Tournament matchups through the course of the 4 days. And that was the same with the two bets. That was for the 4 day total score.
We're talking once again to Patrick Everson from covers.com. NFL draft will take place end of this month. Obviously, last year when we had no live sports, it became a very bet-on thing here in town and across the country, Patrick. There's a lot of fascination, and producer Aaron Oster and myself both went in on Justin Fields to be the third pick of the draft. As we get closer, there might be more information that comes out that leans you in one way. It's fascinating. JVT and I were talking about yesterday, we don't really understand this Mac Jones love. So what have you heard about the third pick prop out there with the 49ers going up 9 spots? They're going to get a quarterback. The question is, will it be Lance, Fields, or Mac Jones?
Right. And that's really the first spot where this gets intriguing, because I'm sure, as you guys have discussed, Trevor Lawrence, Clemson QB, I was going back and forth with the guys at PointsBet just a little bit earlier, just before coming on the show with Patrick Eichner there. And Lawrence is -10,000 to be the number one overall pick. So there's no fun to be had there. Zach Wilson, BYU QB, he's -2,000 to be the second pick. So it doesn't really start to get interesting until number three. And at PointsBet right now, Mac Jones, -200 favorite, Fields the +250 second choice. And what Pat Eichner told me tonight, he said it's been almost all Mac Jones since that 49ers news from a couple of weeks back and the movement and so forth going up the odds board. But he did say that Fields has come into play the last few days with some of the rumors on that front, PointsBet seeing a little more interest in him. So I think that's a well-placed bet at +250. That was one they definitely pointed out. They went right to that one. They're like, this is, number one and number two, not a whole lot to tell you there, but number three is definitely intriguing. And I like your line of thinking there, Tim. I like the plus money.
We'll take it.
You took that idea from me.
I did. Yeah. Anything.
I like that idea, John.
Thank you.
Any good idea, Patrick, I just steal from JVT. Apparently I didn't steal him, laying the points on the Nuggets tonight as they come home and take care of business.
Needed to come back. We're getting 106-96. Still undefeated since they have acquired one Aaron Gordon, Tim Murray.
Anything other intriguing NFL draft discussions? We're starting to see these new props starting to trickle out. And I think one that you've got some information on, Patrick, is first linebacker selected. I imagine Micah Parsons as a pretty significant favorite, but maybe my guy Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame. What do you have on a first linebacker select?
Smooth.
Yeah, I'm glad you pronounced that, so now I don't have to. So, so the Notre Dame linebacker, no, just kidding. So Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, getting sharp money at PointsBet USA to be the first linebacker taken. He's the second choice, but he's pretty well back of behind Micah Parsons. So, but there's some sharp play there. So I thought that was something definitely interesting to bring up. And, beyond that, there's, like I said, the first couple of picks are pretty dialed in. Some of these first position players to be picked beyond linebacker, honestly, they think it's going to be Parsons, but at least there's some sharp money saying otherwise. And Patrick Eichner indicated, Patrick Surtain is pretty much a lock to be the first cornerback. So it doesn't look like there's going to be necessarily, they're not expecting a lot of surprises, but I certainly like the idea behind Justin Fields, and I thought it was interesting on the first linebacker with perhaps the Notre Dame Fighting Irish standout getting the nod there.
Patrick, have you gotten a sense of when we're going to see more of these props up as we get closer to the draft? One of my things that I've always kind of, I guess irritated is the proper term, but these kind of come out at a crawl, and then we see some operators put up like a good set of props for the NFL draft, but it's like 2 days out, and then you pull them down right before the draft because information. It's one of these rare events where bookmakers are kind of on even footing with bettors because we're all getting the exact same information, and it's no real advantage one way or the other to be had. Do you get a sense of maybe some more props coming up a little bit earlier and maybe with a little bit more speed here so we can start to get into them, or what?
I would hope so, and for a multitude of reasons, but the main one is, as we all know, I mean, the NFL drives the bus. There's never not interest in the NFL. Yep. It's unlike any other American sport on the sports betting landscape. There's just, you know, 12 during the season, obviously it is the king, and rightfully so, but you know, any of this off season stuff that comes up, and Super Bowl futures odds moving all the time, and the draft is, as Tim alluded here a bit earlier, it's become more and more a big deal. So I would hope that they, you know, try to, you know, whether it's this year or next year or what have you, that they start rolling out more of this market more, because the interest is there. And I don't think it's, you know, necessarily a difficult thing to manage. And like, so the interest is always there. So why not let people take a crack at it?
He is Patrick Everson, senior reporter for Covers.com. Always love picking his brain. Great stuff, Patrick, as always, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Good to talk to you, JVT. Be well.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
There he is at Covers_Vegas JVT. The smile on his face, even though he looks a little grumpy right now, but he should be a happy man.
Just thinking.
Because he's got victories, winning winners. We'll get you updated on the NBA card and also the MLB card next on the other side. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN. Your middle on. Got JVT over here. He's ready to not only, now he's getting greedy.
Maybe, how's that?
Maybe, I don't know. You feel like you had a victory on Utah?
No. It's about setting yourself up, right?
So Phoenix, you took the two with Phoenix. Phoenix led by 10 at the half. 11. 51-40. So you decided to jump back in and took a little Utah in game.
Yeah, -4.5 with the second half. So that puts you, my math, what is essentially +6.
Yeah, +6.5.
Right. So sitting on Phoenix +2 and the Utah game essentially +6. So we'll see how this goes. They have scored the first 7 points of the second half. And this is the other thing too. You know, we're starting to see them kind of give Phoenix a little less space on those pick and rolls. You know, they want that soft area of the floor. Utah generally gives that to their opponents. Second half adjustment has been, you're not going to get it that much. And it has led to a 7-0 run to start the half here.
51-47. A three-pointer might be coming here in just a second because my ESPN is ahead of this game. I bet you makes this.
Oh. You know, Adam Hill and I, who's been on the show,
yep.
We used to do that all the time where we would try to get people to bet us, you know, keeping track of a game like where people live at the actual game itself and then watching it on a stream at a bar and trying to get people to bet us. Like, I bet this three-point shot goes in. No. Okay.
That worked
out. You can't be too confident. That's the thing. You know, like when you're trying to get somebody to bet you, you got to just approach it
nonchalantly.
Casually. Yeah. Like, hey, what do you think? You think he makes this?
So 54-47 right now. The Suns leading the Utah Jazz. The total 227.5. So trending well under with just 91 points in the first half. For the Utah Jazz. Just for comparison's sake, the first half total was 111.5, and you had just 91 points there. The Denver Nuggets get the cover. Cover the 5 at the Westgate Superbook and other spots around town. 106-96, the final score, as Denver takes care of the San Antonio Spurs. So a nice finish to that game there for the Denver Nuggets. And taking a look inside that box score, Denver outscoring the Spurs by 6 in the second half to get that 106-96 victory. You are a believer. No triple-double for Nikola Jokic, who had 25-9-9 in the third quarter. Just one more assist for Nikola Jokic, so he finishes with 25-10 assists. 9 rebounds, so no triple-double there for Nikola Jokic, but a 10-point win for the Denver Nuggets as they now improve to 33-18 on the season.
They only gave up, they gave up under a point per possession. Offensive rating for San Antonio today, 94.1. And this has been like the biggest difference for Denver, I think, when you've been watching them. You know, their offense is still going to be extremely good. And, you know, they didn't have Jamal Murray out there on the floor tonight, but like, from a defensive standpoint, Tim, what they have been able to do, you know, I mentioned the 94 that they gave up just now to San Antonio. Defensive rating 106.8 to the Clippers when they beat them down the other day. And defensive rating in 99 to the 76ers, 109.6 to Atlanta. New Orleans Pelicans got them a little bit at 121.3. The Pelicans, though, a team that I think matches up relatively well with them. But this defense is really solid, man, especially with Gordon here. And he's a little bit of a game changer. Undefeated since they got him. And they're, especially when you consider the flaws of the teams around them in the Western Conference, they're a legitimate contender now for the Western Conference.
Earlier tonight, a game that I think many people were looking forward to seeing because Kevin Durant returning. He comes off the bench. The Brooklyn Nets win 139-111. They had 79 points in the first half, outscored the Pelicans by 17 in the second quarter. Kevin Durant in 19 minutes on the floor. He was 17 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, did have 6 turnovers, but did not miss a shot. 5 for 5 from the field, 2 for 2 from three, 5 for 5 from the free throw line. So a big day for Kevin Durant coming off the bench tonight, playing 19 minutes as the Nets, who saw some little bit of a reverse line movement here in this one, as it was, what, open 10.5 last night when we were talking about it? Went off at 9?
I think you generally have to be kind of careful with the openers in the NBA.
7.5.
Yeah. So, and I think you do got to be careful sometimes with the openers in the NBA. You know, those numbers generally aren't around very often, or not very often, for very long, I should say. And we see them move relatively quick. And sometimes I'll be looking at openers, and I'll be like, what? Like, a team will be favored by 7, and it was like, you know, 4 on the overnight. What was that? Like, sometimes I think it's just maybe a mistake, but you're right. It was that high for a little bit yesterday.
And, yeah, Brooklyn taking care of business and rolling to the victory. VGK looks like they're going to fall to the St. Louis Blues here tonight by trailing 3-1 in the final minutes of that one. That's JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Tim Murray, and got a little revisit the NFL draft. We talk quarterbacks, talk some skill positions. How about defensive players? Who will be that first defensive player selected? We'll discuss that next. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN.
Days of the college hoop season, I would actually argue that we're done with the college hoop season. Plus, Major League Baseball's back in action. Masters is going to start tomorrow. Spring has amazing betting opportunities, and now is a great time to sign up for your free trial to VSiN and put our experts like Tim Murray to work for you. We have the best coverage of sports betting anywhere. I was about to Ron Burgundy this, so we should really be careful with some of the stuff we put in this, including in-depth baseball and Masters Week betting previews on VSiN.com, our daily best bet emails from our experts and guests, 24/7 video coverage, and everything you need to get ready for every sport on the schedule. It's the time to get in on the action. Sign up for your free trial today at VSiN.com/subscribe.
So that's quality. That's a quality read right there. I appreciate it. JVT, he's in-house. At me, JVT. By the way,
last 5 minutes, I know. Time flies. I'm getting out of here.
Sources soon. Tell me that you will see more JVT next week on VSiN. That is, can that be confirmed?
I think it can. I think I'm on the schedule. I haven't really looked. I should be filling in for Matt Humans on My Guys in the Desert all week next week. So
beautiful.
For those of you.
People
are adjusting their schedules.
Coming off this spring sports read, that is, that's a top-notch read. You know, it also is in the spring.
What got me was in it, it says, feel free to ad lib. And I was about to start to read, feel free to ad lib. And ultimately caught myself. Thank God.
With specific examples.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you should have been, you know, mentioned that Hardwood Handicappers podcast. When's the newest podcast coming out?
We are tentatively set to record for tomorrow, so we'll see.
Beautiful.
I'm efforting one Aaron Renning to get onto the show. Very, very hard man to track down, to pin down. Hopefully we get him.
He wants to be the senior analyst here.
Yeah, he was pretty rough with me when I talked to him the other day. Pretty prickly. You know, we were talking out here in the Circus Sportsbook.
And yikes.
He actually told me to, no.
I don't know where we're headed right now.
It's a wild ride.
First defensive player drafted. So we all know that It'll be Trevor Lawrence. It'll be Zach Wilson. It'll be a quarterback going three.
Will it?
Would you like to pitch me on how it won't be a quarterback?
Well, I mean, I do think that there is an argument to be made that, you know, if what Kyle, what Mini Shanny does with his offensive weapons and what he can do with anybody a quarterback, I say anybody that, you know, has any semblance of quarterback skill in the NFL, from C.J. Beathard to any one of the other, you know, no-named guys that he has used as a quarterback over the last few years, there's a very strong argument to be made in that office, I think, that if we add another skill position player, like Pitts, for example.
Do you know what C.J. Beathard's record was under Kyle Shanahan?
Oh, it wasn't very good.
2-10.
Yeah. But wins are also a very flawed way to measure a success of a quarterback. And there's, and by the way, you're not rolling with C.J. Beathard, right? You'd actually roll with Jimmy Garoppolo if you passed on a quarterback. True. So there is.
And
that.
I think you're still rolling with Jimmy Garoppolo regardless.
Now, I'm being facetious. I think it's going to be a quarterback. Personally, I think it's going to be Justin Fields. But I think if I'm building, if I want to build a real monster, Kyle Pitts, along with Kittle and that offense, be a pretty darn hard offense to stop.
Would be it'd be fun to watch. But if you're the 49ers, you just move to six if you want one of the, you know, the playmakers there. But they go up to three, so they're going to get a quarterback. But this is a offensive-dominated top end of the draft because you're looking at Lawrence, Wilson, Jones, Fields, Lance at three. Maybe a quarterback goes four. Pitts goes four. You're looking at Devontae Smith. So many offensive weapons. Then it goes to Penei Sewell. The first player, the first defensive player, JBT, off the board may not come until 9, 10 or so. So who is that player going to be? And according to BetMGM, the favorite is Micah Parsons, who's a stud, great linebacker. If you look at Dane Brugler, as he calls it, the beast, his draft guide that just came out, his top defensive player is Micah Parsons. Actually, it is Patrick Surtain, I beg your pardon, at 10. So when you look at these odds right here, anything jump out at you? Daniel Jeremiah, his most recent mock, his first defensive player was actually Kwity Paye, the edge rusher from Michigan, at 8-1.
Yeah, and so there's a couple things that sticks out. One, Micah Parsons being the favorite. I don't mind Micah Parsons being the favorite. What I mind is the price, right? Again, when you're looking at $1.30, we're talking about an implied probability of over 56%. I just don't know if it's that certain that Parsons is going to be your first defensive player off the board. And so, you know, the way you go through it personally is just, okay, let's look at the draft order. You mentioned it and where he might go, right? Because, you know, we can evaluate these guys about, okay, who's the best defensive player and go that route, but it's also about the teams that are drafting and what their needs are. And so, you know, for example, I could foresee a scenario where Atlanta at number four wants to draft a defensive player, right? Their defense from a front seven perspective was actually very good last year. It was one of the underrated aspects of the league year last year was their front seven played the run extremely well, a lot of advanced metrics. They were in the top half of the league. Their secondary wasn't very good. So I think the Atlanta Falcons are a candidate to take a defensive back. So that would put me on a Surtain at about plus 180, somewhere in that range. Detroit, I think, is another candidate for a defensive player. They just took a defensive back last year, first round. So maybe that's where you get a Parsons because their front seven needs a little bit of help. Denver at number nine is a candidate potentially for a defensive player. And so I think really what it boils down to me, Tim, is if we're talking about implied probability, prices, and where you find value, to me the value is it taking a plus 180 price tag on a guy like a Surtain to be the first defensive player drafted because of his position and because just reading some of the reports that are out there, right, some of these talent evaluators do have him as the best defensive player in this draft.
Yeah, and I think if you watched the tricky part with, you know, Micah Parsons, with Penei Sewell, with Jamar Chase, with Slater from Northwestern, they all opted out this past year. So there wasn't that tape this year. I don't know if it's really going to affect them all that much.
Well, I would say, and I know you guys have had them on before, you know, the guys at Pro Football Focus, they talk about this a lot. You know, Sam Monson and Steve Palazzolo, I was listening to their podcast the other day. You know, there is a train of conversation around guys like Penei Sewell who opted out. Kind of sliding is a strong term. We think of slide, it's like 10 picks. There are people who do not think that Penei Sewell is the best offensive lineman in this draft, right? Maybe some of that is opting out. And what does that mean for his evaluation and a price tag on him, like at like a minus 950 to be the first offensive lineman taken? So I would say to you, like, I don't think that's the worst point, that some of these guys who opted out, it could potentially work against.
Well, the tricky part for Penei Sewell, the other tackle who would potentially jump him, which is Rashawn Slater from Northwestern. Yep. He also opted out.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't like, you know, there was another tackle. You know, Landon Dickerson, obviously from Alabama, he's dealing with injuries, the torn ACL, but he's a guy that could be a first-round pick. I think his stock was risen this year. But going back to the question at hand, I don't disagree with the Patrick Surtain, Kwity Paye. You know, there's always a price. There's always a premium on edge rushers. This is a draft class that its edge rushers aren't thought of as, you know, as we've seen in recent years. But could you see a team, you know, like a Denver, like a Dallas, mm-hmm. saying, hey, we need more edge rushers, more guys who can get to the quarterback? But I think Patrick Surtain at plus 180. And J.C. Horn, he's another corner out of South Carolina. A lot of folks are high on J.C. Horn. He could be one that could be of interest there as the first defensive player taken. So we'll continue to just touch base on some of these NFL draft props as they pop up over the next coming weeks. Who will make the NBA playoffs? I know JVT is chomping at the bit to tell us who's in and who's out. We'll discuss those next. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN. Hiring, there's no luxury of time. So instead of waiting for people to see your sponsored post, invite them to apply. More at indeed.com/credit. JVT's checking out his TikTok right now. You TikToking?
My TikTok just is set up for one reason and one reason only. And I think maybe as a man in my situation, you would understand. I have TikTok to like my wife's videos, and that's it. She tells me, hey, put up a new one. And I just go, like it. And I'm like, there you go. Love you.
Good husband.
That's how I support. That's what I do.
Husband of the year.
Right.
Senior analyst of the year. Husband of the year.
Senior analyst of the year is very hard. I feel like there's a lot of senior analysts out there.
I believe in you.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
You're giving out winners left and right with Denver earlier today, and hopefully we'll get Phoenix home. Phoenix up 72-65 under 3 media timeout in the third quarter. This one went off. Utah laying 3 on the road against the Phoenix Suns, a total of 227, and trending under, and the Suns leading 72-65. You also have, what, in-game Utah plus 6.5?
Yeah, they laid the 4.5 second half, so that would put you, they were down 11, so that puts you about 6. It could fall on 6 and win, or push, whatever it is. I'm not good at math, but 6.
So earlier in the show, we looked at some of the win totals and where they stood. Mm-hmm. We've seen a couple come home already. Charlotte coming home tonight. Now you have to get at least to 70 games, but that was one that came home. Boston is close to hitting the under. Has it hit the under yet?
One loss is all they need.
So Boston does win tonight against the Knicks, but that one coming close to coming home. The Knicks over has hit.
It has. They were the first team to go over their win total, and that happened like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. It was a while ago.
But there are also some make the playoff props out there, and I want to start with the San Antonio Spurs because you have been – well, let's clarify before we get into these. As you see the graphic there with the 7 teams to make it or miss, you need to make the playoffs as – one of the 8 seeds.
Right.
So you need to make it out of the play-in. If you just make the play-in and then get eliminated, that's not making the playoffs. You need to make the full bracket of 8 teams. So a team like the Warriors right now is, what, the 9-10 seed?
I think they're currently in control of the 9 right now.
Okay, so they would need to get that 8 seed in order to consider to be this a winning bet.
Remember, it's not even just getting the 8 seed. You essentially have to win the play-in because, remember, the 7 and the 8 are in the play-in.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's the other facet about this. And right now, by the way, the Golden State Warriors are in control of the 10 seed. They are a game behind San Antonio, to give you an idea of that.
But starting with San Antonio, I have a feeling I know where you're going. I don't know if you'll lay the $5 on the no, but you are not a believer in this San Antonio team being able to hold on to where they are right now with the difficulty of their schedule remaining, with them kind of, I mean, being what they are, not that great of a basketball team right now.
Correct. Like, if you look at the teams around them that they're potentially competing with, right, we can look at from a matchup perspective if they make it into the postseason, into the play-in, I should say. Memphis, light years ahead of them defensively. Memphis, a team who is a little, you know, we'll call it fickle when it comes to their scoring, a little hot and cold, but still I think a team that is power rated a good amount higher than San Antonio. You know, a New Orleans Pelicans team that is starting to kind of come up and rise among the rankings when they're fully healthy can destroy them at the rim. The Spurs are a team that give up a lot of rim shots. And then just the overall structure of their second half schedule, what they have in front of them, the way that they're playing at this point, I don't even think they're going to make the play-in, let alone make it to the playoffs at this point. So, yeah, like, minus 500, it's a very large price to pay there. It's, you know, I don't think there's value in that number, but it's always important to say that just because a number is high doesn't mean that there is no value. You just have to, you know, find where the value is. Minus 500 could have value for some. For me, there is no value in that number.
What about the New Orleans Pelicans right now, as of today, and they got smoked 139-111 by the Nets tonight in Brooklyn, but they're currently in possession of the 11 seed. However, as you alluded to with San Antonio, not likely, in your opinion, making the play-in situation. So do the Pelicans at 4-1 to make the playoffs, so they would have to make that play-in situation and then win. The play-in works 7, 8, 9, 10. 7 plays 10?
No, so what will happen is 7, 8, 9, and 10 will make it. 10 and 9 will play one another. Winner takes on the loser of the 7 and 8.
Right.
So it gives you the, if you're the 7 or the 8, you only have to win one to get in. If you're the 9 or the 10, you got to win two to get in. You got to win that matchup and then the one against the loser of the previous.
So when you look at the New Orleans Pelicans, 22 and 29 right now, they do have, you know, Zion, Brandon Ingram. What's the health situation there?
Mm-hmm.
At 4-1, is this an intriguing price to grab the New Orleans Pelicans to make the playoffs? In comparison to the other teams in the Western Conference, you're looking at the Grizzlies, who are in eighth place right now at plus 130, and then the Warriors, who are currently 10th place at plus 165 to make the playoffs.
So I would say with the Pelicans, yes. You know, they had shown signs of kind of putting things together. I mentioned that five-game stretch they were on. It extended out a little bit larger to about a seven-game stretch as well. The issue is, as you noted, and it's very important, health is a pretty big deal. You know, Zion, luckily, avoids a really serious thumb injury that only causes him to miss three games, but we haven't seen Brandon Ingram for a really long time. Lonzo Ball was dealing with an issue, I think it was a hip issue, that kept him out for a couple of games. But if this team is fully healthy, Tim, from an offensive standpoint, there's no question that at least among the play-in teams outside of Dallas, they are the best team, right, offensively outside of Dallas in these teams that are hovering in the play-in range, right? Dallas, much better shooting team, so they get the edge there. But like the Pelicans would be able to handle in a play-in game against the new Golden State Warriors if it was them, if it somehow became the San Antonio Spurs. In a matchup with Memphis, it would be very tough, and I think that would be what it came down to. Memphis, in terms of their defense, very stout inside, cut off the rim, allow perimeter shots, doesn't really play into the hands of New Orleans. But I think if you look at it, just putting yourself in position, again, evaluating these schedules, 10th easiest schedule left in the NBA, or excuse me, 10th hardest schedule left in the NBA for New Orleans, but the back-to-backs are extremely limited. I think this is one where if you're talking about 4-1 or higher, that would be something that is worth investing in for me for New Orleans to make it, because we have seen the signs of them when they're fully healthy starting to turn things around a little bit.
So when you sticking in the Western Conference, so at the Pelicans at 4-1, you got the Grizzlies at currently a game and a half ahead of New Orleans, three games ahead of the Warriors in possession of the eight spot at plus 130, knowing that if you get that eight seed, you only have to win one game to get into the postseason, as opposed to the 9 and 10 spot have to win two games. Does the no or the yes intrigue you when it comes to Memphis?
I would want more on the yes than more than just plus 130, right? Because remember, well, you only have to win one game if you're Memphis. At this point right now, the way the bracket is, that one game is against Dallas. Right. So like that would be tough, and that would put you in, again, the win-or-go-home situation against, more than likely, I would say, New Orleans, but it potentially could be Sacramento. So I would say, like, I would just want a little bit more on that plus price. I think they're a team that is very live to make it to the postseason. I want closer to, like, I think truer odds are plus 175-ish, somewhere in that range, 2-1, is something that is worth investing in at that price, given the road the Grizzlies have to take.
So switching over to the Eastern Conference as we take a look at some of the yes-no props to make the postseason. By the way, The Phoenix Suns have lost their lead. The Utah Jazz lead 78-77 going into the fourth quarter. So that would be a perfect situation right there. That score would be a winner.
Can we call it?
Both sides. Yeah. You want to
call it? End it. What was the end?
Throw in the towel.
Yeah. Throw in the towel. Stop the count. We're done.
Toronto Raptors, 20-31 right now. They are currently in possession of the 11th spot at +230, JVT. Those odds seem a little too short for me on the yes.
Correct. Yeah, that's it. And then, too, like with the Raptors and a team that, you know, had been taken down, for some reason they're not up. They were one of the first times that I was allowed to fill in here. But think about the teams that are in front of them. You know, I don't really believe in Indiana very much. Mm-hmm. To me, the team that sticks out is Chicago, right? Chicago is getting better. They have covered four consecutive games now. They get Nikola Vucevic. Kobe White's back in the lineup, too. He's starting to get healthy. Zach LaVine missed one game, I think, since they had Vucevic on the roster. But Chicago is a team that I have circled as a team that I want to play on and a team that I think has some upward mobility here at the bottom of the standings. And then you look at the teams around them. Look, I love this Charlotte team. Right, but Charlotte for right now is in a precarious spot with the injuries. Gordon Hayward out through the month. LaMelo Ball done for the rest of the year. Rumblings that he might come back, but if he's coming back, we're talking about May. There's 2 weeks left in the season. So, you know, there is potential for Toronto to potentially get back in this, but I just think when you're looking at it overall, the way their roster is currently constructed, how shorthanded they are offensively, I just think it's a little too much of a hill to climb there for Toronto. So I'm with you. I think that seems like a little bit too short of a price.
Well, what about the Pacers? Because you mentioned you're not very high on them. I'm not either. Currently in the 9 spot, you look at +190 on the no. Currently in 9th. Now, the Knicks are falling, and they certainly could fall out of the 8 spot. But is it definitely going to be the Pacers who jump in there? At +190 to miss the postseason for the Pacers, is that an intriguing play to you?
Obviously, I had a brain fart too, looking at will they make the postseason, yes or no. So at +190 for them, so we're telling you that it is more than likely that they're going to make the postseason.
Right.
The $2.50 price tag is really high.
Yeah.
And for Indiana,
because they're currently the 9th spot.
Right. And for Indiana, too. And look, this is, I think sometimes when we use ATS stats, it's a little overblown, right? We don't use them in the proper context. But you can use them in the context of finding how a market perceives a team in terms of its value, right? So, for example, this Pacers team this year, Tim, has covered at a 39.6% clip. The market really overvalues this Pacers team for some reason. So to tell me, when you're looking at that, at -230, that there is a 69% chance that you're going to make the postseason, that just doesn't compute to me whatsoever. So the no would be the way to go on Indiana.
All right, so the ones that you like, Pelicans at +$4, yep. Intriguing to you. And
you can find Chicago at like 2-1. They were like a week ago. That would be the one that would circle immediately.
+$2?
Yeah, to make the postseason.
That's JVT. I'm Tim Murray. We'll get you an update on the fourth quarter, which is underway in the desert, Utah and Phoenix, and also some look ahead to the futures market for college hoops. We'll do that top of the next hour. It is the Nightcap.